report to the Commandant.
Kulla spoke briefly into the microphone, not moving his gaze from a position about 30 degrees to their right and 25 degrees high. Jacob looked, but saw nothing. He could hear a distant murmuring of Helene's voice filling the region of the head of Kulla's couch. Then the ship began to turn. Jacob checked the computer board. The results were in. The previous encounter had elicited nothing recognizable as a reply. They'd just have to keep on doing as they had before.
Sofunts,
Helene's voice rang out over the intercom.
Pring Kulla has made another sighting. Please return to your stations.
Kulla's mashies clacked. Jacob looked up. At about 45 degrees, a tiny flickering point of light began to grow just beyond the bulk of the nearest toroid. The blue dot grew as it approached, until they could make out 5 uneven appendages, bilaterally symmetric. It loomed up swiftly, then stopped. Sun Ghost Manifestation Type 2 leered down at them in its gross mockery of the shape of a man. The chromosphere glowed red through the jagged holes of its eyes and mouth. No attempt was made to bring the apparition in line with the flip-side cameras. It would probably have been futile, and besides, this time the P-laser took precedence. He told Donaldson to continue playing the primary contact tape from the point where the last contact broke off. The engineer raised his microphone.
"Everyone, please put on your goggles. We're going to turn on the laser now."
He put on his own, then looked around to make sure everyone in sight had complied. Kulla was exempted. They took his word for it that he was in no danger. Then he threw the switch. Even through the goggles, Jacob could see a dim glow against the inner surface of the shield wall as the beam punched through toward the ghost. He wondered if the anthropomorphic figure would be more cooperative than the earlier, natural-shaped manifestation had been. For all he knew, this was the same creature. Maybe it left earlier to put on its makeup for this present appearance. The ghost fluttered impassively while the beam from the communication laser shone right through it. Not far away, Jacob could hear Martine curse softly.
"Wrong, wrong, wrong,"
she hissed, her psi helmet and goggles made only her nose and chin visible.
"There's something, but it's not there, damn it. What in hell's the matter with this thing?"
Suddenly, the apparition swelled like a butterfly, squashed flat against the outside of the ship. The features of its face smeared out into long, narrow strips of ochre blackness. The arms and body spread until the creature was nothing but a ragged, rectangular band of blue across 10 degrees of sky. Flecks of green began to form here and there along its surface. They dodged about, mixed and coalesced, and then began to take on coherent form.
"Dear sweet God in heaven," Donaldson murmured.
From somewhere nearby, Fagin let out a whistling, shivering, diminished seventh. Kulla began to chatter. Across its length, the Solarian was covered with bright green letters in the Roman alphabet. They spelled, "Leave now. Do not return." Jacob gripped the sides of his couch. Despite the sound effects of the ETs and the hoarse breathing of the humans, the silence was unbearable.
"Millie!"
He tried as hard as he could not to shout. "Are you getting anything?" Martine moaned.
"Yes. No. I'm getting something, but it doesn't make sense. It doesn't correlate."
"Well, try sending a question. Ask if it's receiving your psi." Martine nodded and pressed her hands against her face in concentration. The letters immediately reformed overhead. Concentrate. Speak aloud for focus. Jacob was stunned. Deep inside, he could feel his suppressed half shivering in horror. What he couldn't solve terrified Mr. Hyde.
Ask it why it'll talk to us now and not before.
Martine repeated the question, aloud, slowly.
The poet. He will speak for us. He is here.
No, no, I can't,
Laroque cried. Jacob turned quickly and saw the little journalist scrunched, terrified, near the food machines.
He will speak for us.
The green letters glowed.
Dr. Martine, Helene da Silva called, ask the Solarian why we shouldn't come back.
After a pause, the letters shifted again. We want privacy. Please leave.
And if we do come back, then what?
Donaldson asked. Grimly, Martine repeated the question. Nothing. You won't see us. Maybe our young, our cattle. Not us. That explained the two types of Solarians, Jacob thought. The normal variety must be the young, given simple tasks, such as shepherding the toroids. Where, then, did the adults live? What kind of culture did they have? How could creatures made of ionized plasma communicate with watery human beings? Jacob ached at the creature's threat. If they wanted to, the adults could avoid a sunship, or any conceivable fleet of sunships, as easily as an eagle could a balloon. If they cut off contact now, humans could never force them to renew it.
Please, Kala asked. Ask it if Bubba Cub offended them.
The Pring's eyes glowed hotly, and the chattering continued, muffled, between each word he spoke.
Bubba Cub means nothing. Insignificant. Just leave.
The Solarian began to fade. The ragged rectangle grew smaller as it slowly backed away.
Wait!
Jacob stood up. He stretched out one hand, grabbing at nothing.
Don't cut us off. We're your nearest neighbors. We only want to share with you. At least tell us who you are.
The image was blurred with distance. A wisp of darker gas swept in and covered the Solarian. But not before they read one last message. With a crowd of young gathered around it, the adult repeated one of its earlier sentences.
The poet speaks for us.
Part 8. In ancient days, two aviators procured to themselves wings. Daedalus flew safely through the middle air and was duly honored on his landing. Icarus soared upwards to the sun, till the wax melted, which bound his wings, and his flight ended in fiasco. The classical authorities tell us, of course, that he was only doing a stunt. But I prefer to think of him as the man who brought to light a serious constructional defect in the flying machines of his day. From Stars and Atoms by Sir Arthur Eddington, Oxford University Press, 1927, page 41. Chapter 23. An Excited State. Pierre Laroque sat with his back to the utility dome. He hugged his knees and stared vacantly at the deck. He wondered miserably if Millie would give him a shot to last him until the sunship got out of the chromosphere. Unfortunately, that wouldn't be in keeping with his new role as a prophet. He shuddered. During his entire career, he had never realized how much it meant to have only to comment, and not to have to shape events. The Salarian had given him a curse, not a blessing. He wondered dully if the creature had chosen him in an ironic whim, as a joke, or had it somehow planted words deep within him that would come out when he got back to Earth, shocking and embarrassing him. Or am I just supposed to spout out my own opinions, as I always have? He rocked slowly, miserably. To foist one's ideas on others by dint of personality was one thing. To speak clothed in a prophet's mantle was quite another. The others had gathered near the command station to discuss the next step. He could hear them talking, and wished they'd just go away. Without looking up, he could feel it when they turned and stared at him. Laroque wished he were dead.
"I say we should bump him off," Donaldson suggested.
His burr was very pronounced now. Jacob, listening nearby, wished the ethnic languages fad had never caught on.
"There'll be no end of the trouble that man'll cause if he gets loose on Earth,"
the engineer finished. Martine chewed on her lip for a moment.
"No, that wouldn't be wise. Better beam Earth for instructions when we get back to Hermes. The feds may decide to use up an emergency sequester allotment on him, but I don't think anyone would get away with actually eliminating Peter."
"I'm surprised you react that way to the chief's suggestion," Jacob said. "One would think you'd be aghast at the idea." Martine shrugged.
"By now it must be clear to all of you that I represent a faction in the Confederacy Assembly. Peter is my friend, but if I felt it was my duty to Earth to put him out of the way, I'd do it myself."
She looked grim. Jacob wasn't as surprised as he might have been. If the chief engineer felt a need to put up a layer of flippancy to get through the shock of the last hour, many of the others had dropped all pretense. Martine was willing to think about the unthinkable. Nearby, Laroque didn't pretend to be anything but scared as he rocked slowly, apparently oblivious to them all. Donaldson raised his index finger.
"Did you notice that the Salarian didn't say anything at all about the message beam? It passed right through him, and he didn't seem to care. Yet earlier, the other ghost..."
The juvenile
definitely reacted."
Jacob scratched his earlobe. "There's no end to mysteries. Why has the adult creature always avoided being in line with our rim instruments? Has it got something to hide? Why all the threatening gestures on all the previous dives, when he was capable of communicating ever since Dr. Martine brought her psi helmet aboard 2 months ago?
Maybe your P-laser gave it an element it needed,"
a crewman suggested, an Oriental gentleman named Chen, whom Jacob had met only at the start of the dive.
"An alternative hypothesis would be that it was waiting for someone of reasonable status to speak to."
Martine sniffed.
"That's the theory we were working on the last dive, and it didn't work. Bubba Cub faked contact, and for all of his talents, Fagin failed." "Oh, you mean Peter?"
The silence could be cut with a knife.
"Jacob, I sure wish we could have found a projector."
Donaldson smiled wryly.
"'Twould have solved all our problems."
Jacob grinned back without humor. "Deus ex machina, Chief? You know better than to expect special favors from the universe."
"We might as well resign ourselves," Martine said. "We may never see another adult ghost. Folks were skeptical about all of these stories about anthropomorphic shapes back on Earth. It's just the word of a couple dozen sophants that have seen them, plus a few blurred photos. In time it may be all put down to hysteria, despite my tests."
She looked down gloomily. Jacob was aware of Helene da Silva standing next to him. She had been strangely silent since calling them together a few minutes before. "Well, at least this time Sundiver itself isn't threatened," Jacob said. "The solonomical research can go on, and so can studies of the toroid herds. The Solarian said that they won't interfere."
"Yeah," Donaldson added. "But will he?"
He gestured at Larock. "We have to decide what to do next. We're drifting near the bottom of the herd now. Do we go up and keep poking around? Maybe Solarians vary among themselves as much as we humans do. Maybe the one we met was a grouch," Jacob suggested.
"I hadn't thought of that," Martine commented.
"Let's put the parametric laser on automatic and add a portion in coded English to the communication tape. It'll beam into the herd as we spiral leisurely upward, on the off chance that a friendlier adult Solarian might be attracted."
"If one is, I sure hope it doesn't scare me out of my codpiece like that last one did,"
Donaldson muttered. Helene da Silva rubbed her shoulders as if fighting a chill.
"Has anyone else got anything to say on camera? Then I'm going to settle the humans-only part of this discussion by ruling out any precipitate action concerning Mr. Larock. Just everybody keep your eyes on him. This meeting is in recess. Think about ideas on what to do next. Someone please ask Fagin and Culla to join us at the refreshment center in 20 minutes. That's all."
Jacob felt a hand on his arm. Helene stood next to him. "Are you all right?" he asked.
"Fine, fine."
She smiled without much conviction.
"I just... Jacob, would you come to my office with me, please?"
"Sure, after you." Helene shook her head. Her fingers dug into his arm as she pulled him along in a fast walk toward the closet-sized cubbyhole in the side of the dome that served as a captain's office. When they were inside, she cleared a space on the tiny desk and motioned for him to sit. Then she closed the door and sagged back against it.
"Oh, God," she sighed.
"Helene?" Jacob started forward, then stopped. Her eyes blazed blue up at him.
"Jacob."
She was making a concentrated effort to be calm.
"Can you promise me you'll do me a favor for a few minutes and not talk about it afterwards? I can't tell you what it is until you agree."
Her eyes appealed silently. Jacob didn't have to think. "Of course, Helene. You can ask anything. But tell me, what's the..."
"Then please, just hold me."
Her voice trailed off in a cry. She came up against his chest with her arms tucked in front of her. In mute surprise, Jacob put his arms around her and held on tightly. Slowly he rocked her back and forth as a series of powerful tremors ran through her body.
"Shh, it's all right."
He spoke reassuring nonsense words. Her hair brushed his cheek, and her smell seemed to fill the tiny room. It was heady. For a time they stood together, silently. She moved her head slowly on his shoulder. The tremors subsided. Gradually her body relaxed. He stroked the taut muscles of her back with one hand, and they loosened one by one. Jacob wondered who was doing whom the favor. He hadn't felt this peaceful, this calm, for Ifni knew how long. It moved him that she trusted him so. More, it made him happy. There was a bitter little voice below that was gnashing its teeth at this moment, but he wasn't listening. Doing what he was doing now felt more natural than breathing. After a few more moments, Helene lifted her head. When she spoke, her voice was thick.
"I've never been so scared in all my life," she said. "I want you to understand that I didn't have to do this. I could have been Iron Lady for the rest of the dive, but you were here, available. I had to. I'm sorry."
Jacob noticed that Helene made no effort to back away. He kept his arms around her.
"No problem," he spoke softly. "Sometime later I'll tell you how nice it was. Don't worry about being scared. I just about went out of my skin when I saw those letters. Curiosity and numbness are my defense mechanisms. You saw how the others were reacting. You just had more responsibility, is all." Helene didn't say anything. She brought her hands up and put them on his shoulders without creating a space between them. "Anyway," Jacob went on, brushing free locks of her hair into place, "you must have been more startled lots of times during your jumps." Helene stiffened and pushed back from his chest.
"Mr. Demois, you are intolerable. You and your constantly mentioning my jumps. Do you think I've ever been as scared as that? Just how old do you think I am?"
Jacob smiled. She hadn't pushed back hard enough to shake off his arms. Obviously, she wasn't ready for him to let go.
"Well, relativity-wise," he began.
"Fuck relativity. I'm 25. I may have seen more sky than you have, but I've experienced a hell of a lot less of the real universe than you. And my competence rating says nothing about how I feel inside. It's scary, having to be perfect and strong and responsible for people's lives. For me, at least, it is unlike you. You impervious, imperturbable, once-upon-a-time hero oaf, standing there calm as you please, just like Captain Belloc on Calypso, when we ran that crazy fake blockade at J-8 Lek, and now I'm going to go highly illegal and order you to kiss me, since you don't seem about to do it on your own."
She looked at him defiantly. When Jacob laughed and pulled her toward him, she resisted momentarily. Then her arm slid around his neck, and her lips pressed up against his. Jacob distantly felt her tremble again, but this time it was different. It was hard to tell how it was different, since he was busy at the moment. Enchantingly so. Suddenly, agonizingly, he realized how long it had been since. 2 very long years. He pushed the thought aside. Tanya was dead, and Helene was beautifully, wonderfully alive. He held her tighter and answered her passion in the only way possible.
"Excellent therapy, Doctor,"
she teased as he tried to comb the knots out of his hair.
"I feel like $1 million, though I'll admit you look like you've been through a ringer."
What's a ringer? Never mind. I don't want any explanations of your anachronisms. Look at you. You're proud of making me feel like a bar of steel that's been melted and bent out of shape.
Yep.
Jacob didn't succeed at suppressing a grin. Shut up and respect your elders. How much time do we have, anyway? Helene glanced at her ring.
About 2 minutes. Damned awkward time to have a meeting. You were just starting to get interesting. Who the hell called it at such an inconvenient moment?
You did.
Ah, yes, so I did. Next time I'll give you at least a half hour, and we'll investigate matters in more detail.
Jacob nodded uncertainly. It was hard to tell sometimes at what level this femme was kidding. Before she unlatched the door, Helene soberly leaned up and kissed him.
Thank you, Jacob.
He caressed the side of her face with his left hand. She pressed against it briefly. There was nothing to say when he brought the hand away. Helene opened the door and looked out. There was no one in sight but the pilot. Everyone else had probably gathered for the second meeting at the refreshment center.
"Let's go," she said. "I could eat a horse."
Jacob shuddered. If he was going to get to know Helene better, he'd better be prepared for a lot of exercise for his imagination. A horse, indeed. Still, he dropped a little less than a foot back as they walked, so he could watch Helene move. It was so distracting that he didn't notice when a spinning Taurus swung past the ship, its sides emblazoned with starbursts and surrounded by a halo as white and bright as the down on the breast of a dove.
Chapter 24 Spontaneous Emission.
Kulla was just pulling a liquid tube out of Fagin's foliage when they returned. One arm was enmeshed in the cotton's leafy branches. The Pring held another liquid tube in his other hand.
"Welcome back," Fagin fluted. "Pring Kulla was just assisting me with my dietary supplement. I am afraid that in doing so he has neglected his own."
"No problem, sir," Kulla said.
He slowly pulled the tube backward. Jacob came up behind the Pring to watch. This was a chance to learn more about Fagin's workings. The Kantan once told him that his species had no modesty taboo. So surely he wouldn't mind if Jacob sighted along Kulla's arm to see what sort of orifice the semi-vegetable alien used. He was bent over thus, when suddenly Kulla jerked back, pulling the liquid tube free. His elbow collided painfully with the ridge above Jacob's eye, sending him backwards on his rump. Kulla chattered loudly. The liquid tubes dropped from the hands that fell limply to his sides. Helene had trouble choking back a fit of laughter. Jacob hurried to his feet. His "I'll get even someday" grimace at Helene only made her cough more loudly.
"Forget it, Kulla," he said. "No damage done. It was my fault. I have a spare eye, anyway."
He resisted the urge to rub the spot where it hurt. Kulla looked down at him with shining eyes. The chattering subsided.
"You are most gracious, friend Jacob," he said at last. "In a proper client-elder situation, I was at fault for carelessness. I thank you for forgiving me."
"Tut, tut, my friend," Jacob waved it aside. Actually, he could feel the beginnings of a nasty bump forming. Still, it would be worthwhile changing the subject to save Kulla further embarrassment.
"Speaking of spare eyes, I read that your species, and most of those on Pring, had only one eye before the Pila arrived and started their genetic program."
"Yes, Jacob. The Pila gave us two eyes for aesthetic purposes. In the galaxy, most bipeds are binocular. They did not want us teased by the other young races."
Jacob frowned. There was something. He knew Mr. Hyde already had it, but was holding back, still in his peevish mood. "Damn it, it's my unconscious." "No use. Oh, well."
"But, Kulla, I also read that your species were arboreal, even brachiating, if I remember right."
"What's that mean?"
Donaldson whispered to Da Silva.
"It means they used to swing from tree limbs," she answered. "Now hush."
"But if they had only one eye, how did your ancestors have good enough depth perception to keep from missing when they reached for the next branch?"
Before Jacob even finished his sentence, he felt jubilation. That had been the question Mr. Hyde was holding back. So the little devil didn't have a complete lock on unconscious insight. Helene was doing him good already. He hardly cared what Kulla's answer was.
"I thought you knew, friend Jacob. I overheard Commandant de Silva explaining during our first dive that I have different receivers than you do. My eyes can detect phase as well as intensity."
"Yes." Jacob was starting to have fun now. He'd have to keep his eyes on Fagin. The old Cotton would warn him if he was getting into an area Kulla found touchy. "Yes, but sunlight, particularly in a forest, would have to be totally incoherent, random in phase. Now a dolphin uses a system like yours in her sonar, keeping the phase and all, but she provides her own coherent phase field by letting out well-timed squeaks into her surroundings." Jacob stepped back, enjoying a dramatic pause. His foot fell on one of the liquid tubes Kulla had dropped. Absently, he picked it up. "So, if all your ancestors' eyes did was retain the phase, the whole thing still wouldn't work without having a source of coherent light in your environment." Jacob got excited. "Natural lasers? Do your forests have some natural source of laser light?"
"By George, that would be interesting," Donaldson commented.
Kulla nodded.
"Yes, Jacob. We call them the..."
His mashies came together in a complicated rhythm.
"Plants. It's incredible that you deduced their existence from so few clues. You are to be congratulated. I will show you pictures of one when we get back."
Jacob caught a glimpse of Helene smiling at him, possessively. Deep inside his head, he felt a distant rumbling. He ignored it. "Yes, I'd like to see it, Kulla." The liquid tube was sticky in his hand. There was a smell in the air, like new-mown hay. "Here, Kulla." He held out the liquid tube. "I think you dropped this." Then his arm froze. He stared at the tube for a moment, then broke out laughing.
"Millie, come here," he shouted. "Look at this."
He held out the tube to Dr. Martine and pointed to the label.
3-alpha-acetonyl-benzyl-4-hydroxy-coumarin-alkalide mix?
She looked uncertain for a moment, then her jaw dropped.
"Why, that's warfarin. So it's one of Kulla's dietary supplements. Well, then how the hell did a sample get into Duane's pharmacopoeia?"
Jacob smiled ruefully. "I'm afraid that misunderstanding was all my fault. I absent-mindedly picked up a sample of one of Kulla's beverage mix tablets back aboard the Bradbury. I was so sleepy that I forgot about it. It must have gone into the same pocket where I later stashed Dr. Kepler's samples. They all went together to Dr. Laird's lab. It was just a wild coincidence that one of Kulla's nutrient supplements happened to be identical with an old terrestrial poison. But boy, did it have me going in circles. I was thinking Bubba Cub slipped it to Kepler to make him unstable, but I was never very happy with that theory." He shrugged.
"Well, I, for one, am relieved the whole thing is solved," Martine laughed. "I didn't like what people were thinking about me."
It was a minor discovery, but somehow clearing up one small nagging mystery had transformed the mood of those present. They talked animatedly. The only pause came as Pierre Larocq passed by, laughing softly. Dr. Martine went to ask him to join them, but the little man just shook his head, then resumed walking in a slow path around the rim of the ship. Helene stood next to Jacob. She touched the hand that still held Kulla's liquid tube.
"Speaking of coincidences, did you take a close look at the formula for Kulla's supplement?"
She stopped and looked up. Kulla came up to them and bowed.
"If you are finished now, Jacob,
I will put this sticky tube away.
What? Oh, sure, Kala, here. Now, what were you saying, Helene? Even when her face was serious, it was hard not to be struck by her beauty. It's the initial falling of love that for a time makes listening to one's lover difficult.
I was just saying that I noticed an interesting coincidence when Dr. Martine read that chemical formula aloud. Do you remember earlier when we were talking about organic dye lasers? Well,
Helene's voice faded away. Jacob could see her mouth move, but all he could make out was one word, coumarin. There was trouble erupting below. His channeled neurosis had mutinied. Mr. Hyde was trying to stop him from listening to Helene. In fact, he suddenly realized his other half had been holding back its usual tithe of insight ever since Helene had hinted in their conversation at the edge of the deck, that she wanted him to give her the genes she'd be taking to the stars when the Calypso jumped. Hyde hates Helene, he realized with a shock. The first girl I've met who could begin to replace what I've lost. A tremor like a migraine threatened to split his skull. And Hyde hates her. The headache came and went instantly. What was more, that part of his unconscious had been holding out on him. It had seen all of the pieces and hadn't let them surface. This was a violation of the agreement. It was intolerable, and he couldn't figure out why.
Jacob, are you all right?
Helene's voice was back. She looked at him quizzically. Over her shoulder, he could see Kala looking down at them from near the food machines. Helene, he said abruptly. Listen, I left a small box of pills by the pilot board. They're for these headaches I get sometimes. Could you please look for them for me? He brought a hand up to his forehead and grimaced.
Why, sure.
Helene touched his arm.
Why don't you come with me? You could lie down. We'll talk.
No. He took her by the shoulders and gently turned her the right way. Please, you go. I'll wait here. Furiously, he fought down panic at the time it was taking to get her away.
Okay, I'll be right back,
Helene said. As she walked away, Jacob sighed with relief. Most of those present had their goggles on their belts, per standing orders. The competent and efficient Commandant De Silva had left hers at her couch. When she had gone about 10 meters toward her destination, Helene began to wonder. Jacob never left any box of pills by the pilot board. I would have known it if he had. He wanted to get rid of me. But why? She looked back. Jacob was just turning away from a food machine with a protein roll in his hand. He smiled at Martine and nodded at Chen, then started to walk past Fagin to get out onto the open deck. Behind him, Kala watched the group with bright eyes near the gravity loop hatch. Jacob didn't look like he had a headache at all. Helene felt hurt and confused. Well, if he doesn't want me around, that's fine. I'll make a pretense of looking for his damned pills. She started to turn when suddenly Jacob tripped on one of Fagin's root pods and went sprawling on the deck. The protein roll bounced away and fetched up against the parametric laser housing. Before she could react, Jacob was on his feet again, smiling sheepishly. He walked over to pick up the food ball. Bending over, his shoulder touched the barrel of the laser. Blue light flooded the room instantly. Whooping alarms howled. Helene instinctively covered her eyes behind her arm and grabbed for the goggles at her waist. They weren't there. Her couch was 3 meters away. She could picture where she was exactly and where she'd stupidly left the goggles. She turned and dove for them, coming up again in one movement, the protectors over her eyes. There were bright spots everywhere. The P-laser, shoved out of plumb with the ship's radius, was sending its beam bouncing about the concave inner surface of the sunship's shell. The modulated contact code flashed against the deck and dome. Bodies writhed on the deck near the food machines. No one had approached the P-laser to shut it off. Where were Jacob and Donaldson? Were they blinded in the first instant? Several figures struggled near the gravity loop hatch. In the flashing, sepulchral light, she saw that they were Jacob Demois and the chief engineer and Culla. They? Jacob was trying to shove a bag over the alien's head. There was no time to decide what to do. Between intervening in the mysterious fight and eliminating a possible danger to her ship, Helene didn't have to choose. She ran over to the P-laser, ducking under faint crisscrossing trails, and tore out the plug. The flashing points of light stopped abruptly, except for one that coincided with a shriek of pain and a crash near the hatchway. The alarm shut off, and suddenly there was only the sound of people moaning.
"Captain, what is it? What's happening?"
The voice of the pilot rang out over the intercom. Helene picked up the mic from a couch nearby.
"Hughes," she said quickly. "What's ship status?"
"Status nominal, sir, but it's a good thing I had my goggles on. What the devil happened?"
"P-laser got loose. Continue as is. Hold her steady about a click from the herd. I'll be back to you soon."
She released the mic and raised her head to shout.
"Chen! Dubrovsky, report!"
She peered about in dimness.
"Over here, skipper,"
was Chen's voice. Helene cursed and tore off the goggles. Chen was over beyond the hatchway. He knelt over a figure on the deck.
"It's Dubrovsky," the man said. "He's dead, fried through the eyes."
Dr. Martine cowered behind Fagin's thick trunk. The Contin whistled softly as Helene hurried over.
"Are you two okay?"
Fagin let out a long note that sounded vaguely like a slurred yes. Martine nodded once, jerkily, but she stayed clutching Fagin's trunk. Her goggles were skewed over her face. Helene took them off.
"Come on, doctor, you have patience."
She pulled at Martine's arm.
"Chen, go to my office and get the aid kit, on the double."
Martine started to get up, then sagged back, shaking her head. Helene gritted her teeth and hauled up on the arm she held, suddenly snapping the older woman upwards with a gasp. Martine staggered to her feet. Helene slapped her once across the face.
"Wake up, doctor. You'll help me with these men, or so help me I'll kick your teeth in."
She took Martine's arm and supported her across the few meters to where Chief Donaldson and Jacob Demois lay. Jacob moaned and began to stir. Helene felt her heart rise when he took his arm away from his face. The burns were superficial, and they hadn't touched the eyes. Jacob had his goggles on. She steered Martine over next to Donaldson and made her sit. The chief engineer was badly seared along the left side of his face. The left lens of his goggles was smashed. Chen arrived on the run, carrying the aid kit. Dr. Martine turned away from Donaldson and shuddered. Then she looked up and saw the crewman with the medical bag. She held out her hands for it.
"Will you need help, doctor?"
Helene asked. Martine spread instruments on the deck. She shook her head without looking up.
"No, be quiet."
Helene called Chen over.
"Go look for Larocque and Culla. Report when you've found them."
The man ran off. Jacob moaned again and tried to rise up on his elbows. Helene got a cloth from the fountain nearby and wet it. She knelt by Jacob and pulled on his shoulders to get his head onto her lap. He winced as she dabbed gently at his wounds.
"Oh,"
he moaned, and brought a hand to the top of his head.
"I should have known better. His ancestors were tree swingers. He'd have to have a chimp's strength, and he looked so weak."
"Can you tell me what happened?"
she asked softly. Jacob grunted as he groped beneath his back with his left hand. He tugged on something a couple of times. Finally, he pulled out the large bag the protection goggles had come in. He looked at it, then tossed it away. "My head feels as if it's been sandblasted," he said. He pushed himself up into sitting position, wavered for a moment with his hands on his head, then he let them drop. "Cullough wouldn't happen to be lying unconscious around here, would he? I was hoping I turned into a fighting fool after he knocked me dizzy, but I guess I just blacked out."
"I don't know where Cullough is," Helene said. "Now what?"
Chen's voice boomed over the intercom.
"Skipper, I found LaRocque. He's at degrees 240. He's okay. In fact, he didn't even know anything was wrong."
Jacob moved over next to Dr. Martine and began to talk to her urgently. Helene stood up and went to the intercom next to the food center.
"Have you seen Cullough?"
"No, sir. Not a sign anywhere. He must be on Flipside."
Chen's voice dropped.
"I had the impression there was a fight going on. Do you know what happened?" "I'll get back to you when I know something. Meanwhile, you'd better relieve Hughes."
Jacob joined her by the intercom. "Donaldson will be all right, but he'll need a new eye. Listen, Helene, I'm going to have to go after Cullough. Lend me one of your men, will you? Then you'd better get us out of here as fast as you can." She whirled.
"You just killed one of my men. Dubrovsky's dead. Donaldson is blinded. And now you want me to send someone else to help you harass poor Cullough some more? What madness is this?"
"I didn't kill anyone, Helene."
"I saw you, you clumsy oaf. You bumped the P-laser and it went crazy. So did you. Why were you attacking Cullough?"
"Helene,"
Jacob winced. He brought a hand to his head. "There's no time to explain. You've got to get us out of here. There's no telling what he'll do down there now that we know."
"Explain first."
I bumped the laser on purpose.
Helene's jumpsuit fits so snugly that Jacob would never have thought she had the snug little stun gun that appeared in her hand.
"Go on, Jacob," she said evenly.
"He was watching me. I knew if I showed a sign I'd caught on, he could blind us all in an instant. I sent you away to get you clear, and then went after the goggles bag. I kicked the laser free to confuse him. Laser light all over the place."
"And killed and maimed my men."
Jacob drew himself together.
"Listen, you little nit."
He towered over her.
"I turned that beam down. It might blind, but it wouldn't burn. Now, if you don't believe me, knock me out. Strap me in. Only get us out of here fast, before Cullough kills us all."
"Cullough?"
"His eyes, damn it. Coumarin. His dietary supplement is a dye used in lasers. He killed Dubrovsky when he tried to help me and Donaldson. He was lying about that laser plant back on his home planet. The Pring have their own source of coherent light. He's been projecting the adult-type sun ghosts all along, and..." "My God," Jacob punched at the air. "If his projector is subtle enough to display fake ghosts on the inside of a sunship shell, it must be good enough to interact with the optical inputs of those library-designed computers. He programmed the computers to tag LaRocque as a probationer, and I was next to him when he programmed Jeff's ship to self-destruct. He was feeding in commands all the time I was admiring the pretty lights." Helene backed away, shaking her head. Jacob took a step toward her, looming large, with fists tight, but his face was a mask of self-reproach. "Why was Cullough always the first to spot the humanoid ghosts? Why were there none seen during the time he was with Kepler on Earth? Why didn't I think before this about Cullough's reasons for volunteering to have his retina read during the identity search?" The words were coming too fast. Helene's brow knit with tension as she tried to think. Jacob's eyes pleaded.
"Helene, you've got to believe me."
She hesitated, then cried out.
"Oh, shit!"
and threw herself at the intercom.
"Chen, Get us out of here. Never mind strap-in warning. Just put on max thrust and crank up the time compression. I want to see black sky before I blink twice.
Aye, sir, came the reply. The ship surged up against them as the compensation fields were temporarily overcome, sending both Helene and Jacob staggering. The commandant held onto the intercom.
All hands, keep your goggles on at all times from now on. Everybody, please strap in as quick as you can. Hughes, report to the loop hatch on the double.
Outside, the Tauruses began to pass by more rapidly. As each beast fell below the rim of the deck, its rims flashed brightly, as if bidding them adieu.
I should have caught on, too, Helene said dismally. Instead, I turned off the P-laser and probably let him get away.
Jacob kissed her quickly, hard enough to leave her lips tingling. You didn't know. I'd have done the same thing in your shoes. She touched her lips and stared past him at Dubrovsky's body.
You sent me away because...
Captain, Chen's voice interrupted. I'm having trouble getting the time compression off automatic. Can I keep Hughes here to help? We've also just lost Maserlink with Hermes. Jacob shrugged. First the Maserlink to keep word from getting out, then time compression, then the gravity drive, finally the stasis. I guess the last step is to blow the shields, unless the other steps are sufficient. They should be. Helene toggled the intercom.
Negative, Chen. I want Hughes now. Do what you can alone.
She cut the switch.
I'm going with you.
No, you aren't, he said. He put his goggles back on and picked up the bag from the floor. If Kulla gets to step three, we're cooked, literally. But if I can stop him part way, you're the only one who'd stand a chance of piloting us out. Now please lend me that gun. It could be useful. Helene handed it over. At this stage, argument would be ridiculous. Jacob was in charge. She had no ideas of her own. The quiet thrumming of the ship changed its rhythm, becoming a low, uneven hum. Helene answered Jacob's questioning glance.
It's the time compression. He's already started slowing us down. In more ways than one, we haven't very much time.
Chapter 25 A Trapped State. Jacob crouched in the hatchway, ready to dive back behind the combing at the sight of a tall, gangling alien. So far so good. Kulla hadn't been in the gravity loop. The turnaround route to Flipside, the only route, might have been a good place for an ambush, but Jacob wasn't particularly surprised that Kulla wasn't there. For two reasons. The first was tactical. Kulla's weapon operated on line of sight. The loop curved very tightly, so the humans could approach within a few meters without being spotted. An object thrown around the loop would travel most of the way with undiminished velocity. Jacob was now sure of this. He and Hughes had thrown several knives from the ship's galley when they entered the loop. They found them near the Flipside exit in a puddle of ammonia from the liquid tubes they'd squeezed ahead of them as they walked the topsy-turvy passage. Kulla could have been waiting just beyond the door, but there was another reason he had to leave his rear undefended. He had only a limited amount of time before the sunship reached a high orbit. After they got into free space, the humans would be safe from the tossing of the chromospheric storms, and the tough, reflecting physical shell of the ship could deflect enough of the heat of the sun to keep them alive until help came. So Kulla had to finish them, and himself, off quickly. Jacob felt sure the Pring specialist was by the computer input, 90 degrees around the dome to the right, using his laser eyes to slowly reprogram past the machine's safeguards. Why he was doing it was a question that would have to wait. Hughes picked up the knives.
With the bag, some liquid tubes, and Helene's little stunner, they composed their armory. Classically, since the alternative was death for all of them, the answer would be for one man to sacrifice himself so the other could finish Kulla off. He and Hughes could carefully time their approach from different directions to surprise Kulla at the same moment. Or one man could come in front, and the other aim the stunner from over his shoulder. But neither plan would work. Their opponent could literally kill a man as fast as he could look at him. Unlike the faked adult sun-ghost projections, which were continuous output, Kulla's killer bolts were discharges. Jacob wished he could remember how many he'd fired off during the fight on topside, or at what repeat frequency. It probably didn't matter. Kulla had two eyes and two enemies. One bolt each would probably suffice. Worst of all, they couldn't be sure that Kulla's holographic imaging ability wouldn't enable him to locate them the instant they stepped out onto the floor from reflections off the inner shell. He probably couldn't hurt them with reflections, but that was poor compensation. If there weren't so damned much attenuation during the internal bouncing of the beam, they could have tried to disable the alien with the P-laser by letting it sweep the entire ship while the humans and Fagin crowded into the gravity loop. Jacob cursed and wondered what was keeping them with the P-laser. Next to him, Hughes mumbled softly into a wall intercom. He turned to Jacob. "They're ready," he said. Thanks to their goggles, they were spared most of the pain when the dome outside burst with light. Still, it took a few moments to blink away tears and adapt to the brightness. Commandant da Silva had, presumably with Dr. Martin's help, dragged the P-laser to a new position near the rim of the upper deck. If her calculations were right, the beam should hit the side of the dome on flip side, exactly where the computer input was. Unfortunately, the complexity of the figure needed to go from point A to point B through the narrow gap at the edge of the deck meant that the beam probably wouldn't harm Kulla. It did startle him, though. At the instant the beam came on, while Jacob was squeezing his eyes shut, they heard a sudden chattering and sounds of movement far to the right. When his vision cleared, Jacob saw a thin tracery of bright lines hanging in the air. The passage of the P-laser beam left a track in the small amount of dust in the air. That was fortunate. It would help them avoid it. "Intercom on Max?" he asked quickly. Hughes gave thumbs up. "Okay, let's go." The P-laser was randomly putting out colors in the blue-green. They hoped it would confuse reflections from the inner shell. He gathered his legs and counted. 1, 2, go. Jacob dashed out across the open space and dove behind one of the hulking recording machines at the rim of the deck. He heard Hughes land hard, two machines clockwise from him. The man waved once when he glanced back.
"Nothing over here,"
he whispered harshly. Jacob took a look around the corner of his own machine, using a mirror from the aid kit, which had been smeared with grease. Hughes had another mirror from Martine's purse. Kulla wasn't in sight. Between them, he and his partner could survey about 3/5 of the deck. The computer input was on the other side of the dome, just out of Hughes's view. Jacob would have to take the long way around, darting from one recording machine to another. The sunship's shell glowed in spots where the P-laser beam glanced off it. The colors shifted constantly. Otherwise, the red and pink miasma of the chromosphere surrounded them. They had left the big filament minutes before, and the herd of toroids with it, by now 100 kilometers below. Below was actually right over Jacob's head. The photosphere with the big spot in the center made a great, flat, endless, fiery ceiling above him. Spicules hung like stalactites. He gathered his legs beneath him and took off, bent over and facing away from any possible ambush. He leapt over the P-laser beam where its path was traced in floating dust particles and dove behind the next machine. Quickly, he eased the mirror out to look at the territory now exposed. Kulla wasn't in sight. Neither was Hughes. He whistled two short notes in the brief code they'd agreed upon. All clear. He heard one note, the fellow's reply. He had to duck under the beam the next time. All the way across the narrow distance, his skin crawled, anticipating a searing bolt of light along his flank. He stumbled behind the machine and caught hold of it to steady himself, breathing heavily. That wasn't right. He shouldn't be so tired already. Something was wrong. Jacob swallowed once, then began to slide the mirror out along the counterclockwise edge of the machine. Pain lanced into his fingertips, and he dropped the mirror with a cry. He stopped just short of popping the hand in his mouth, and held it instead a few inches away, his mouth open in agony. Automatically, he started to lay over a light pain relief trance. The red pokers started to fade as the fingers seemed to grow more distant. Then the flow of relief stopped. It was like a tug of war. He could only accomplish so much. A counter-pressure resisted the hypnosis with equal strength, no matter how hard he concentrated. Another of Hyde's tricks. Well, there was no time to dicker with him. Whatever the hell he wanted. He looked at the hand, now that the pain was barely bearable. The index and fourth fingers were badly fried. The others were less damaged. He managed to whistle a short code to Hughes. It was time to put his plan into effect, the only plan with any real chance of success. Their only chance lay in getting into space. Time compression was frozen on automatic, the first thing Kulla took care of after the maser link. Their subjective time would pretty closely match the actual time it took to leave the chromosphere. Since assaulting Kulla was almost certainly futile, the best way to delay the alien's murder-suicide would be to talk to him. Jacob took a couple of breaths as he leaned back against the hollow recorder, careful to keep his ears awake. Kulla was always a noisy walker. That was his best hope against out-and-out attack by the Pring. If Kulla made too much sound out in the open, Jacob might get a chance to use the stunner he clutched in his good hand. It had a wide beam and wouldn't take much aiming. "Kulla!" he shouted. "Don't you think this has gone far enough? Why don't you come out now and we'll talk?" He listened. There was a faint buzzing, as if Kulla's mashies were chattering softly behind the thick, prehensile lips. During the fight topside, half of the problem facing him and Donaldson had been avoiding the flashing white grinders